The year is 2003. Tom is your first friend on MySpace. 50 Cent costs a dollar on iTunes. The Terminator becomes the Governator. And nobody can find those weapons of mass destruction. T-minus 20. Rewind 20 years with Joe and Mel.
Week of 10 August 2003.
T-minus 20.
The rest is history.
It's Britney, bitch.
T-minus 20.
You meant to nominate two housemates.
If you think you're some bitch is full of crap, give me a hell yeah.
20. Welcome to Jackass.
It's all good. We're over that hump of 100 episodes and I'm starting not to feel complacent, but just a little bit relaxed, a little bit at ease with the fact that we've been doing this for a while and we actually know what we're talking about. It's T-minus 20, the podcast where we rewind to this week 20 years ago with your host, Joe and Mel. Hello, Mel.
Hello. We know what we're talking about in terms of 10 to 16 August 2003.
What's happening this week?
Is the week we're rolling back to. We've got the weather featuring blackouts.
Oh.
We're talking about the weather.
Well, we're old enough to be doing that. We're of the age where the weather is very important.
Do enjoy some weather content. Mm-hmm. We've got a new GG here in Australia.
A GG. That's what we say good game when we're playing Call of Duty. Oh, you're talking about the Governor General.
Yes.
Wow, you're older than me if that's the way you're talking. Cool, what else?
Football got a new Ronaldo.
Oh, yeah, we did. We got another Ronaldo in the football.
Ronaldo part two. We nerd talk computer viruses and D&D.
I love nerd talking computer viruses and D&D because feel a little bit tougher than the next person when I do that.
And our life coach, he's got a brand new single in the top five.
He does.
Exciting news.
He
yes.
does. And it's got a bit of a Caribbean feel to it.
Reminds me of Sesame Street, to be honest. Every time I hear that song, I think of Sesame Street.
If that's good or bad. Or
I don't know if that's a good
comparison. I don't know what Mr. Hooper's selling out of his store if that's the case.
It's a little bit concerning, yes.
It is a bit concerning. You know what else is concerning is we are of the age where all of a sudden we don't know the words. And by that, I mean, when you're younger, you have all these cool words back in the day, like radical and gnarly.
Yes.
I'm at a loss for them these days. So it's at a you come to this realization where you are one of the oldest people in the room at work, in conversations, just generally when you're out and about in social and professional circles. And I am very far behind the times to the point where somebody said something was chuggy the other day.
Oh.
And I was like, what's a chuggy? And it was difficult for me to comprehend what a chuggy was, but the definition is it's an American neologism. Is it neologism? I believe that's the term. Coined in 2013. 2013. This has been around.
So it's old
Chuggy's
news.
Been around since 2013.
Slow.
I didn't even know. A pejorative description of lifestyle trends associated with the early 2010s. This aesthetic has been described as the opposite of trendy or trying too hard. That's a bit chuggy.
So that it's a try hard.
And it's something that millennials use. So this is the generation after us. Remember back when millennials were the ones that were looking down?
I always thought
down?
Millennials were babies, yes.
They're not babies anymore. They're not
so
babies
So was this
anymore.
Person referring to you as chuggy?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It was kind of mocking someone being uncool, but it was a millennial who was stuck back in the 2010s. And I'm like, oh, shit. Better not listen to the podcast we do.
No, this is quite a problem.
It is.
So much so that there is a sociology teacher over in the US, 43-year-old James Callahan, and he was struggling with all the words that his students were using, so much so that he created a spreadsheet. So when he heard the words, he popped them into his spreadsheet.
I love this. I love it. Where can I find it?
Look up the definition. The spreadsheet is online. Look up James Callahan.
Mm.
A couple of them. Let's see if you know. High key. Have you heard of high key?
Nah.
Opposite of low key.
Really?
Which kind of makes sense. So that's high key, meaning that's really obvious. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Instead of thank you, Captain Obvious, it'll
high
be
high key.
Thanks, Captain High Key.
Okay.
Hop
do you reckon
off?
That's how it's used, or do you reckon people are getting embarrassed hearing you say it that
I
way?
Think they are, yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, that's
hop
not
off.
That is not how you use it in a sentence, woman.
Right.
Hop off.
What's hop off?
Mind your own business. Mind your own beeswax.
Hop off, like step off.
Yeah, mind your own beeswax.
Hop off. That sounds too gentle. Like, I'll just hop off now.
Sounds like pop off.
Yes.
It's making me think of farts. Mm. Yes. Nanya?
Nanya.
Nanya. This feels like an Australian one, actually. Nanya. Nanya.
What is Nanya?
Nanya business.
Really? Nanya business.
Yes. Snack?
Snack.
Snack.
Well, snack is something that you have after school or in the middle of the afternoon when you're feeling a bit peckish. I know that
person.
One. What?
It's a good-looking person.
An attractive person is a snack.
That guy over there, what a snack.
Oh, as in when back in the old days when they're like, oh, that lovely lady, she's quite the dish.
Yes.
Now they're just snacks.
Now they're just a snack, yes.
Is that because of too many carbs? Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Hardo?
I beg your pardon?
Hardo.
Hardo.
He's such a hardo.
What's that?
Try hard.
I like try hard better.
You're hardo. You're hardo.
No, we had better.
Finner.
Words.
I see finner used a lot and I've never known what it was.
What's finner?
Finner. What do you think finner is?
Something to do with surfing?
It's always I'm finner something in a sentence. I'm finner.
Finished? Finalized?
Planning something.
You're finner. You're planning something.
Yeah, I'm finner going to the beach or something like that.
What?
I know.
That's not a word.
I don't like finner.
That just makes you sound devolved.
And then there's this girl who works with probably people of our age.
Yeah.
Possibly younger than us. Mm. And she's become their go-to.
Yeah.
For language. So they check in with her on the team messaging.
She's like an organic urban dictionary.
Yes. Right. So she works with guys between the age of 48 to 75 and they text her to make sure they're using the slang correctly.
Yeah.
Some examples below. From boss, age 74. Can I say this meeting got lit if I mean people were getting upset? She replies, no, but you can say they were salty about it.
They were salty if they're upset. If you
get lit, that's going off. Getting lit is a good thing,
getting
isn't it?
Lit, yeah, that's what it's turned into.
Let's
like
get
that
lit.
That was fully lit.
Mm.
But back in our day, remember there was a band called Lit?
Yes.
But getting lit was being high.
Yes.
Like if you were lit, you were under the influence of something.
Yes.
Mm.
And then another one message. Actually, I've had one of these conversations with a younger person that I work with. What does yeet mean?
Yeah, that means to throw something away.
I didn't know that. How? I don't
yeet
understand.
It away.
Yeet. And there's the opposite of yeet. I can't remember what it is now.
Mm.
And it means to take it back.
Yoink.
Yes.
Yoink means to take something and yeet means to throw it away. Hey, how about it, kids? Old yoink. Uncle Joe's hip to it, isn't he?
Yoink. That feels like a sound effect on Scooby-Doo or something.
That's where they got it from, you know.
And then the project manager, age 48, messages her, do people still say hella? And she replies, not in this state. So maybe you need to get in touch with this person. She's called the at meanest TA.
Wow.
To check your language.
I heard one the other day that it was mid, which means mediocre.
Oh.
But and they were referring it to somebody's appearance. And it was quite an attractive person, I believe, too. Like a really beautiful celebrity. And they're like, oh, she's just mid.
She's just mid.
She's mid. She's mediocre. And I was like, well, you're no oil painting. And they're like, oh, well done, grandfather. You know, what an insult. Well, you're no oil painting, are you? Once more over the top, let's give it to Jerry, boys. You know.
Definitely not a dish, no. A snack, I
just
don't know.
A snack. Mm. Just a snack, my dear. Oh, that was pretty mid recorder playing.
It was
snack.
Off the hizay, off the chain.
I don't think they say
we don't
that.
Say that. It was hella good. We don't say hella either.
Say hella
no,
good
we
either.
Don't say that in this state.
It's so disappointing, isn't it? I don't even know. I don't even know who I am anymore.
I'm gonna finna my practicing or something.
Oh.
I don't know.
It's time for the Hatch and Match and Dispatch clue. And normally I'd say it's a celebrity, but I'll give you a bit of a hint. This person isn't really a celebrity, but definitely a notorious figure from history who was dispatched this time 20 years ago. If you know who this is, well, you can just switch off now. But if you don't, stick around till the end of the show and we'll tell you the the notorious figure from history who said this.
The duty of the woman is the house woman. He knows how to keep house very well. If we can do that, let me make first examination, appoint women to be the managers of hotel.
Yeah, yeah, one more time.
The duty of the woman is the house woman. He knows how to keep house very well. If we can do that, let me make first examination, appoint women to be the managers of hotel.
Let me tell you, that gentleman wouldn't go too well with today's slang.
Feeling a bit salty about that.
Salty is old as well, right? Like, that's a very, that's like, that's so, you're so choogy with all the words you're using. I'm intrigued by this week's news because recently in the news in the present day, there's been a lot of talk of this over in Europe as well. Now, this time 20 years ago, on the 11th of August we're talking, and sort of right across August in Europe, there is a massive heat wave occurring. A heat wave in Paris, for example, where temperatures were rising to 112 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 44 degrees Celsius, which killed people. So this was summer of 2003, went for about 2 weeks from late July to early August. And during this time, the temperatures went well above normal, reaching record-breaking levels.
At the time, this was the hottest summer recorded in Europe since at least 1540.
Who
How would they even know that? Who had a weather station or a rain gauge back in 1540?
Somebody did, clearly. Yes. Very advanced society.
Kept some good notes there. During the heat wave, like you said, exceptionally high, some days exceeding 40 degrees. And this was really unusual for the region and actually caught many residents off guard.
And it's interesting from our perspective because we do experience fairly extreme temperatures in our neck of the woods. There's been times where we've had heat waves and temperatures of around 45 degrees during the day. And it's, I wouldn't say it's business as usual, but we tend to be able to cope with it as long as we've got good electricity and air conditioning. Now, if that stuff starts to fail, then you start to get real problems. And the people that it affects most is obviously the elderly and the frail.
And in France, they don't commonly have hot summers, particularly in the northern areas. And because of the usually mild summers, most people didn't quite know what to do. They didn't know how to react to these high temperatures because they hadn't experienced it before. So they weren't thinking of things like drink more water, make sure you're hydrated, stay out of the heat, seek shelter.
I might be enforcing a stereotype here, but I like the lifestyle, or what I hear the lifestyle is like, where you go and have a big lunch and a little bit of wine and then you have a snooze in the afternoon. And if you're a little bit dehydrated when you go and have that snooze in the afternoon, you're going to wake up in a bit of a state.
And family homes and a lot of facilities in France didn't actually have air conditioning because they didn't need it. Most nights are quite cool in France, even in the summer. So what they find, even if it does get a bit warm during the day, the houses that are usually made out of stone or concrete or brick, they don't warm too much during the day and radiate minimal heat and then cool down overnight. So air conditioning's not necessary. But during the heat wave, the temperatures remained at record highs even at night. So they didn't have that cooling cycle that they usually have overnight where everything cools down.
Everything becomes like a big stone oven. So it was interesting. There were stories coming out of there at the time where people were going down into the catacombs to cool down because it's like stone underground, nice and cool down there, and a little bit creepy. But you know what it feels like when you walk out into 40-something degree heat, and even when you inhale and you breathe in the air, it is just hideously uncomfortable.
On one day alone, a day that's now known as Black Monday, 3,000 Parisians died.
Never during the Second World War did so many people die in one night in Paris, even during the bombings. We were dealing with things on such a scale. Paris had never had that many victims in one go.
Dr. Patrick Perlou was on the front line of the crisis. His hospital was overwhelmed as more and more of the dead and dying arrived. The morgues were soon full. There were so many bodies, a refrigerated warehouse at the edge of the city had to be used as a temporary morgue.
What you see over there are the zinc roofs of Paris. People were baking in there. The police were opening doors only to find corpses behind them.
Black Monday, I believe, was right across the country, not just in France. So just to be clear with that, but there was like 30,000 deaths right across Europe. There was temperatures in Tunisia, I was reading, of 48 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
Now, Tunisia is where they shot Star Wars in the desert there.
Mm. So
48 degrees, just hideous weather. I mean, and we all in Australia know those kind of temperatures all too well. They had all these contingencies in place, their emergency services, for things like natural and man-made catastrophes, but high temperatures was never factored into the equation.
And I think another big issue with it was in summer, so it was over the holiday period.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were away.
Mm.
Government wasn't, like Parliament wasn't sitting.
They were all on holidays.
They were on holidays, and it was the elderly that actually suffered the most, but it wasn't the most vulnerable elderly. It was the elderly that lived on their own and were quite self-sufficient, but during the heat wave didn't actually know what to do, whereas the elderly who had people coming and checking on them who actually needed support, they were looked after. It was more the self-sufficient ones that were sort of left to their own devices while friends and family were off on vacation.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to do. So that was the biggest impacted proportion of people.
Well, it showed also how vulnerable the city, especially Paris, was, but, you know, their emergency service, the medical system there just crumbled under the weight of it.
Mm.
And it showed that they couldn't handle extreme weather events at all. And they really needed to improve things, because if anything like this happened again, they'd find themselves in the same pickle. So as a consequence, they had to have a massive review of their disaster response measures. They had this huge investigation. They wanted to understand everything that contributed to the high mortality rate. And it's everything that we're saying there. It's like people being away, people being on holidays, people being left alone that were a little bit more vulnerable, that might have seemed perfectly okay, but then this extreme weather hit and they just didn't make it, you know.
It was also when talk started about climate change,
yeah, and
people started going, hey, this isn't normal. Something's not quite right here. Maybe we should look into it. When sort of the first serious discussions around climate change occurred. So this was right across Europe, not just France. I think Portugal, they had the hottest day in centuries on the 1st of August, and nighttime temperatures were well above 30 degrees Celsius or 86
like
Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Luxembourg reached 37.9 degrees Celsius or 102 Fahrenheit, which was the highest temperatures since records began over there in the 1940s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Spain, 45.1 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
Germany, they actually couldn't navigate the Danube because the water was too low. Yeah,
they couldn't get any ships down there. Yeah,
reduced cargo capacity by 70%. They also had melting glaciers in the Alps, which caused avalanches and flash floods in Switzerland.
It was pretty nasty. So the highest temperature in the UK, because you know the Poms, they just can't handle the heat, especially when they come over here for the cricket. 38.5 degrees in Kent it was, and that's the first time they've ever gone over 100 degrees Fahrenheit in there. Which, and like I said, now we've got record temperatures over there, and it's funny when they talk about 38 because we're like, ha ha, that's nothing. But still, if you're not used to it, it knocks you around.
We went over there in August, and so obviously this was right in the middle of the heat wave, and people weren't coping.
Of this year, were you there at the time?
Yeah.
You were in Europe in 2003 during this.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so we went, I think it was probably closer to the end of August. So it was on the towards the end of the heat wave.
So this is, you were in the States and then you went across and traveled after that.
Yeah, went across to the UK and then Italy. Italy was really, really hot.
Yeah.
And because it's all, you know, dark coloured cobblestone streets, it was, pretty scorching. But in the UK, I just remember, what's that big park across from Buckingham Palace? I just remember.
Oh, I know the one where you're not allowed to touch the swans.
And it's normally beautiful green, but it was all dried and dusty. And I just remember people sitting out there just fanning themselves and drinking water, and they just didn't know what to do.
Heavens above.
Whereas we were going, just a normal day for us. It was,
it was
sort of mid to late 30s, and people just were not coping.
Well, we know what that heat's like. Like it gets freaking hot here during the summer, but it only gets hot in our area for probably – we have maybe a solid month where it is super duper hot, where you could get up to those 40 degree temperatures, and in really bad years you'll get to maybe 44, but you really push it over 45, although there has been a couple of times where it has gotten to, I want to say around 48, but that's very anecdotal coming 48. From me.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's when you can barely breathe when you walk outside. It's just
you've got to stay inside.
God. But the funny thing was is I never got air conditioning in my house until a few years ago. Like we bought air conditioning. We'd always live without air conditioning, and you'd have those couple of nights where it was really hot. And the strategies that you used to put in place, like you'd have a fan, on you the entire time.
And you'd have a wet washer on your face. I think we slept outside once.
Spray bottle had slept outside once because they just couldn't get the heat out of the house. So I get what they were saying, you know, when they had those days where they're like, it's nice and cool with the stone, but then it doesn't cool down over time. Mm. But I remember I used to put T-shirts in the freezer.
Yes.
And that would help for all of about 5 seconds.
Yeah, you'd wet your pillow and then you'd turn your pillow over. And
just hideous. I can't believe it.
But I think they're experiencing a similar situation right now, aren't they?
Yes.
There's heat waves right across Europe at the moment. In
20
the States.
Years after the fact, and it's happening all over again. And they're predicting now that we're going to have a very, very warm summer this year. So can't wait for that, especially with the price of electricity and all that stuff. It's just funny. Like the more things change, the more they stay the same. Like we talk about climate change and all that stuff and the things that might have happened over the last 20 years, but that happened 20 years ago.
Mm.
And I'm not trying to be a skeptic either side of it, but it is very interesting. Now, like you said, you were over that side of the world, but at this stage you were in the United States, I believe.
I was.
And very interestingly, you were in a particular city on the 14th of August where a massive event occurred. Baby, when the lights I just feel like you wanted an excuse to play that song.
Yes.
And I think it's
in
poor
taste. I think it's appropriate. No, I think it's the perfect song.
I am offended.
For this news story.
On behalf of New Yorkers everywhere. But you were in New York City. You've spoken about this before on the 14th of August.
Yes. It was the wide-scale blackout in the northeast of the US and Canada. And one of the most extensive power outages in North American history at the time. It was the world's second most widespread blackout after the one in 99 in southern Brazil.
Mm.
It covered a really large area. It affected around 50 million people in the United States and over 10 million people in Canada. Started around 4:10 p.m. on the 14th of August and lasted for approximately 4 days, with power gradually being restored, kind of depending on where you were.
So when did you arrive? When did you show up there?
I don't remember the dates exactly, but I'm pretty sure we arrived when it first happened. So we'd just finished up with summer camp, and we were in Maine, in Harrison in Maine, and we hitched a ride to Westchester, which is just kind of outside. It's not too far away. So then we thought, oh, we'll get a cab, because there was about five of us, I think, and we'll share a taxi from there to New York. It should be, you know, a half hour. I don't know anything about time, but I think we figured out it'd be about a half hour trip.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get in the taxi and it was just stop, start. And it was taking forever. And it got to the point where the taxi driver, because it was getting into the quite a few hundred dollars.
And so you were trying to get into Manhattan.
Getting into Manhattan. Yeah. Yep. And the taxi driver said, you know what? I'm actually just going to turn the meter off. And we're like, what's going on? He's like, something's going on with the roads. I'm not too sure what's happening. And we get into the main part of New York eventually. It took so long and it was just chaos. So the traffic lights weren't working. The streets were blocked. There's people panicking. It's really busy. And I didn't actually want to go to New York. My sister was the one that really wanted to.
Yeah.
And we got there and we didn't know it was a blackout. And I just assumed that this is what New York was. And I'm looking around and I said, I told you I didn't want to come here. Look at this. This is crazy. This is so hectic. What the heck? Let's get out of here. And then it wasn't until the taxi driver, he put the radio on.
And he heard, baby, when the lights go
And he went, thank you, five. Yeah. Now we know what's going on.
You can
on.
Thank me later too for that. Well done.
there's a blackout. And New York was one of the major affected areas, obviously because of its size, the density as well. And it also occurred, you know, this is less than 2 years after September 11.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what is running through people's minds at the start. I think the subway trains came to a halt. Some of them were between stations.
Yeah.
So we actually saw people coming out of, they had to open up like the manholes and pull them out of there.
They did. There's a bit of that in this news report.
It began at 4:10 Thursday afternoon, a chain reaction power failure that swept the Northeast. Office workers poured into the streets, traffic lights went out, and gridlock gripped Manhattan.
How would you describe traffic in the city right now?
Chaos. Complete chaos.
Subways stopped dead in their tracks, and thousands were stranded underground. They inched their way along the walls, staggering blindly through the tunnels in total darkness. They relied on pen lights, lighters, even the light from our TV camera.
So it was just a really terrible experience for me. I never want to go through nothing like this again. I'm all shaken up. I just want to get home and hug my family.
It was bizarre watching the footage of it because they were coming out of the ground like miners. They had like soot and stuff on their face. And it's pitch black down there. And so New York is a very vertical city.
Yeah.
It's not really horizontal. And when you take away that vertical stuff, because they're all coming out of buildings, there was also
people were trapped in lifts.
I was going to say elevators, in elevators, having to go down fire escapes. Mm-hmm. And obviously traveling down fire escapes in some of these skyscrapers, very reminiscent of September 11, bringing back a lot of very bad memories for a lot of people. So there was a little bit of a hysteria.
Yeah, and traffic lights were out. You couldn't call people, so all the cell phone networks were down as well. Yeah. We checked into a hotel, and because the lifts weren't working and the hotels had the slidey door keys, none of that was working.
In the room, so
they had to, each time we went to our room, someone from reception would have to walk up. I think we were on about the 10th or 11th floor. So we'd have to walk up 10 or 11 flights of stairs and they would have to open the door for us to get into the room, and the toilet wouldn't flush. So the rule was number ones only.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think this went on through the first night and I think power started coming back on the next day.
Well, it was 4 days overall, so obviously some of the basic power came on.
I think half of New York got power back the next day, and it was really interesting because we went down to Broadway, and it was pitch black, and all these people are taking photos, and I'm like, why would I take a photo of this? You can't see anything. It was probably the first time that people had ever seen Times Square completely blacked out. It was pretty surreal, and a lot of the restaurants, they didn't have any power. So they were bringing out beer and stuff like that and selling it out on the street. So people were having all these street parties. And it was actually quite cool in some respects, but we made the mistake of eating at a deli the next day, and their refrigerator was obviously not working. Ooh. So we all got very sick.
So I have so many questions. When did the penny drop and you realized that there was a blackout when you got there?
It took a little while, but then the taxi driver turned the radio
on. So it was on the radio.
And we heard it on the radio because the mayor, Bloomberg, he actually ended up making a statement because everybody was worried that it was another terrorist attack.
Yep.
So he had to quickly come on and let everyone know what was actually happening to try and calm everybody down and reassure everyone.
My second question, especially after you went to the deli, is where did you poo?
Public toilets. We weren't. Oh. The rule was you're not allowed to use the one in the hotel room because there was about six of us staying in the one hotel room. So it was,
public toilets.
Yeah, it was really hectic and it was really frightening to start with.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that was quite interesting was the next day. You know how you've got all the I Love New York paraphernalia.
Uh-huh.
So there's so many souvenir shops. The next day, literally the next day, there's T-shirts in the souvenir shop saying, I survived the New York blackout. How did they get them printed? I don't know.
Manual screen printing.
I don't know.
Old school.
But literally the next day they had I survived the New York blackout.
It is the land of opportunity, isn't it?
So it sure is.
This was actually caused in Ohio.
Yeah.
It happened in Ohio.
Yeah.
And it was, I believe it had something to do with a tree. hitting some pretty big power transmission lines.
It hit a power line in Cleveland, and then there was a whole bunch of things. I think there was a bit of human error.
Yep.
There was some software issues. There were equipment failures. And basically it meant that the backup processes didn't quite work. So I think what happens when a power grid goes down in one location, it's supposed to let other locations know so they can pick up the load or something like that.
And they just never did that.
And because it didn't send that warning, it just kind of had this domino effect. So all of these other power grids just periodically started shutting down.
Right. And I guess when you turn off such a vast area of the United States, like normally you see this stuff from space, and I've seen the photos as well and it's just black. Like normally it's lit up like a Christmas tree, and that area of the United States was just black.
Yeah.
And so I think when you start to turn, like, you know how they talk about, if we go back to heat waves and hot weather and stuff, when everyone's using their air conditioning, they do load shedding and you have brownouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to turn all this stuff back on. Mm. You can't just flick it all back on at the flick of a switch, because obviously that would cause problems further down the line for other areas.
Yeah, and I think the heat may have contributed as well, because there was a big load on the power grid because of the heat waves as well.
Yeah.
But then it just caused this series of shutdowns across.
You remember, even when we went into New York in 2012. And it was freezing cold, like it was on the cusp of autumn and spring. But then they had that one warm day where it got up to 30 degrees, or it would have been like 28 or something, the ambient temperature. But I realized very quickly how hot it gets in the city, because it's all concrete.
Concrete, yeah.
And it just warms up so quickly. And it was, we went from wearing like full-blown winter apparel, like thermal socks and pants
beanies and
jackets and layers, to T-shirt and shorts, because it was just so ridiculously hot in the space of a day. And it was uncanny. So I could not imagine, without air conditioning and all of that stuff, how those poor people would have got through. Well, they got through by basically having massive street parties and stuff.
Yeah, which that was actually really cool, because we were walking around that night trying to find a toilet. And people were just sitting out in the streets playing music and having a drink. And a lot of restaurants had just candles and they were serving up whatever they could. So it was kind of cool in that respect as well.
A massive tailgating party.
All the barbecue nuts
would have been out on the streets barbecuing. Yeah. But unfortunately, a lot of people started looting as well.
There was a bit of looting and it did. Yeah, it was a little bit scary as well in some respects. It cost billions of dollars as well, due to the disruption to businesses, transport and other essential services. And here's the most disgusting fact. 30 million gallons of untreated human waste were released into the East River. That wasn't me.
Okay, well, that answered the where did you poo question in the East River.
Oh. So, yes, a bit of a wake-up call around the resilience and reliability of the power grid. Somebody was probably put on notice over that as well.
If only the infrastructure was resilient as the people that live in that city.
But yeah.
What a time to have gone there.
Yeah.
Like, that is a really big moment in history.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was just angry with my sister for the first half an hour. What have you done? Why did you make me come here?
You might not know fancy words, but it'd be like, come and sit around, kiddies, and Auntie Mel will
tell you about that time I yeeted the blackout. Is that right? No.
You threw the blackout.
No, okay.
Tell you about the time I yeeted my poo in the East River in the blackout. We do have another news story, which is a shame, because that was a really good way to end that segment.
Anyway. Oh, well, we could just ditch this one you like.
No, we've got the new Michael Jeffrey, Major General.
Oh,
Michael.
No, this is important.
Yeah, this is here in the Australia. Governor of Australia.
Yes.
Servant of the monarch, Major General Michael Jeffrey, sworn in as the Governor General. He was the one that succeeded the very controversial Peter Hollingsworth, which we won't talk too much about.
Yes,
but
yes.
Michael Jeffrey, AC, CVO, MC, 12th of December 1937 to 18th of December 2020. That's when he died. He was a senior army official and vice regal representative. At 16, he left Perth to attend the Royal Military College in Duntroon. Actually, you know what? Sky News did a whole thing on him when he died. Where's that?
Hailing from Perth, Major General Jeffrey attended the Royal Military College Duntroon in Canberra. He served in Papua New Guinea, Malaya, and Borneo. Michael Jeffrey was awarded the Military Cross during his tour in Vietnam before commanding the Special Air Service Regiment. He served as Governor of Western Australia from 1993 to 2000, becoming Governor General in 2003.
Yeah.
Well, she just stole all my facts.
She did a little bit, but I mean, it's Sky News. So, you know, it was very, it was a bit more right wing. You might want to bring it a little bit more to the left. Like, I mean, short of them Sieg Heiling at the end of the story. Way to go, Sky News. When'd you get Alan Jones to start goose stepping in his jack boots all around it?
Why
are you waving me away? Am I editing that out?
Yes, yes. He was formally appointed by Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
Sworn in on the 11th of August 2003. The first Australian career soldier to actually become the Governor General. So, he's the highest representative of the monarch here in Australia, and he is appointed by the monarch, which is why Lizzie appointed him, on recommendation of the Prime Minister. So he's got formal presidency over the Federal Executive Council. He's the Commander-in-Chief of the Australian Defence Force. Yep. He also goes to a lot of functions. He appoints ministers, judges, ambassadors. He issues writs for the election.
Yeah.
That's exciting because they drive up to his house, don't they, when they call an election.
And he had a lot of military clout. I think this was the thing. Did you say this before, the first career soldier to become a governor general?
Yes, I did say that.
Yeah, you did.
I think Sky News probably said that as well.
No, I don't know about Sky News. Anyway.
But yes, he was, which is good because he is the boss of the defence as the governor general.
Well, yes, that's part of it, I guess.
Yes, kind of. part of his job. You know, commander-in-chief.
A bit arm's reach from it all. The governor general only really steps in if things are going pretty south.
Oh, he goes to weddings as well. Yeah. He went to the royal wedding of the Crown Prince of Denmark.
So he should. I mean, how offensive would it be if he didn't invite him?
And he went to Charles and Camilla's wedding as well.
There's a prime opportunity there when they're like, speak now or forever hold your peace. Like, come on, Michael, do it for the country, mate.
Michael here. Just got something to say. I got to meet him. I got to go to his house.
Did you?
And it was very formal. I was told before I went in I wasn't allowed to touch anything.
Really?
And, Hang on. Stop.
Why did you go to the Governor General's
Tell him
house?
About the blackout in New York.
That's not true.
When I was doing the children's show with the possum.
Yes, right.
There was, I think it was Walk Safely to School Day.
Yep.
It's a national day. I think we still have it.
Uh-huh.
But it started when I was doing that show and he was the founder. I think it was his idea. He had something to do with Walk Safely to School Day.
Is that right?
So I got to go to his house and he told us about Walk Safely to School Day. I got to interview him and then he showed us how to safely cross the road and we crossed the road at his house.
You crossed the road at government house?
Yes. There wasn't a lot of traffic. But he showed us. He showed, look to the left, look to the right, look to the left again. I think he held my hand or he held Possum's hand. He held someone's hand. Lovely guy.
He was a lovely guy.
I had to call him something.
Your Excellency?
Something like that. I can't remember. But then he was fine. He was like, oh, don't worry about that. He was nice. Just call me the GG. I'm the OGG.
The OGG.
OGG.
Michael. Call me
nothing but a G thing,
Mr.
baby.
Mr. Jeffries.
What he said. But very nice house.
You practiced.
I didn't touch anything.
You didn't touch anything except for his hand.
I don't know if I did.
Oh, you must have.
I think I did.
Or maybe
the possum.
Did you curtsy?
No, I thought I had to, but no, he was fine.
And then you practiced crossing the road in his driveway.
Yes, yes. It was fun.
What did you do after the break?
I just asked him a few questions about walking safely to school. And did he walk to school when he was little? I can't remember.
All jokes aside, he did do a lot for the country.
He's a lovely guy.
I mean, aside from all of his just impeccable military service record.
Yeah.
He also became the ambassador for improving the soil quality in Australia. He was an ambassador for Parkinson's disease.
Walk safely to school day.
Walking safely to school day. Mm. What a great man.
Yeah.
When did he pass away? 20...
It was only a couple 2020. Of years ago,
yeah,
wasn't
he was
it?
Like 83 years old. But, you know, pretty cool. That's so cool that you got to meet him.
Hmm.
Did you meet anyone else while you were there?
I think his wife was there.
How long did you hang out with him for?
A few hours.
What was the house like?
Beautiful.
Yeah?
Beautiful, yes. Yeah. Very nice.
What rooms
did
you go in?
But it did have a smell to it.
It had a smell? What did it smell like?
It's kind of like, you know.
Well, he's old. It'd probably smell like your grandparents' house.
It was like rich old people, though. Not like it had a sense of richness.
Like expensive
wood and old people.
Mothballs and foie gras. Oh, let's go to sport. This is like an episode of Mel, This Is Your Life.
It does feel a bit like that.
You've got, well, you're 2 for 3 with the news. You got the, you were at the blackout. You've met the Governor General. What do you know about Cristiano Ronaldo?
Ex-boyfriend of mine.
Yeah, shit. I'm glad you upgraded.
No, I don't know anything about this this Ronaldo, because this is not the one with the hair.
No, this is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Was the other one's first name Ronaldo, though, wasn't it? The other Ronaldo, that was his first name.
And his surname, for all I know. Ronaldo.
He was Ronaldo something, like Ronaldo Smith, wasn't he?
Sure.
I don't know.
You're telling the story. He's your ex-boyfriend.
No, he's not. This Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yep.
16th of August.
Yes, 18 years old he was, made his debut for Manchester United in the English Premier League, in the big time, and it was a 4-0 victory that he was involved in over the Bolton Wanderers. I think he came on about 30 minutes into the game and put on a bit of a masterclass. I don't think he actually scored any goals in that game, but he certainly set up quite a few of them and had a little bit of flair around the ball, a little bit of razzle-dazzle, but here's a bit of a wrap-up for the game.
But it was all ignited by the introduction on his debut of Cristiano Ronaldo. 2 weeks ago, no one had heard of him. One thing is for sure, everyone knows about him now. He played a part when he came off the bench, all right. Far more comfortable when he was in the team. And United have, on paper, a comfortable start and a clean sheet as well. United 4, Bolton 0.
I think what everyone will be talking about tomorrow is the introduction of Cristiano Ronaldo. He's only had a couple of days training with you, but it's a long time probably since you've seen a debut like that at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Marvellous debut, it was unbelievable. And the thing is, he's a boy, you know, and I said, we've got to be careful with this. He's a young lad, he's going to the full squad in Portugal. I think it's a good thing, actually, for him to go there, because he'll be able to talk to people like Luis Figo and Rui Costa. And that experience he'll get there and talking to them in his own country will be invaluable for him when he comes back to us.
That was Sir Alex Ferguson, the coach of Manchester United, who, believe it or not, in that segment was speaking English. Nobody understood a f***ing word of what he was saying.
He was talking very fast, wasn't he? So was he was the one that signed him, wasn't he? So
yeah.
I think they were originally just going to loan him. I think he was going to be a loaner from the club. Who was he playing with originally?
Well, he's playing over in Portugal for the national side as well. So that's what Ferguson was saying. He was saying that, you know, he's only pretty young. We've got to be very careful of that because there's a lot of hype around him. He's going back to play with some of the people from his own country.
The team was called Sporting.
Of course it was. That's so Sporting. Portuguese. Yeah. They're just like, hey, we are such a good team that we're going to name. What are we doing?
We are Sports.
We are Sporting. We are Sports, and that is the name of our team. Bloody
good
Portuguese.
Name. Yeah. Good name. So I think they were going to loan him from Sporting for a certain amount of money, but then they were going to let them have him back for a bit.
Yeah.
But then they saw him, and the team were like, mate, Ferguson, get him. Fergo. Get him forever. And I think they paid.
And Fergo went, is there any.
So he probably didn't even agree to it anyway. No one just knew what he was saying.
They just didn't know what he was saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay, like, sure.
Imagine him and James Brown having a conversation. That'd be a good time. Anyway.
£12.24 million is what Fergo paid.
Day. Yeah, not bad.
For Ronaldo. Do you think he would have felt pressure to get the same haircut as the other Ronaldo?
There's a show that would fail, wouldn't it? Fergo's catchphrase. Nobody understand what the bloody hell he's talking about.
Well, that'd be the challenge. That'd actually be a good show. Yeah, figure out what he's saying.
Yeah.
You could win $1 million.
Well, I actually like that. That's really good.
That is excellent. Good.
Yeah. Maybe that's that is,
maybe you could
anyway,
pitch it.
Yeah. Back to Ronaldo.
Do you think he would have felt the pressure to get the other Ronaldo's haircut?
No, not at all. He had a pretty crazy haircut as well, though.
Did he?
Yeah, it was a weird hairstyle. It's very
but
flamboyant.
He's like one of the best players in the history of forever now, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he is.
Like,
well, he's still
he's
playing.
A big deal.
He's still playing. He's playing as a forward for and captains the Saudi professional league club Al Nassr and the Portugal national team.
Well, I remember him playing this year and I thought, oh, gosh, Ronaldo is still playing.
Not the different Ronaldo.
I know.
It's Cristiano Ronaldo.
I was thinking of hair Ronaldo.
But the Saudis bought him. So,
did they? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But he, like, okay. So definitely regarded as one of the greatest of all time. Five Ballon Balloon d'Or. I come from the Alex Ferguson school of pronunciation. The 5 Ballon d'Or awards, 4 European golden shoes. That sounds like a weird fetish. So
I have 4 golden shoes.
I know it's only our first date, but are you into golden shoes?
Would you like to see my golden
shoes? What's that?
Shoes?
Well, that's where I piss on your feet. The most by a European. Holds a record for most appearances, 183, 140 goals, 42 assists in the Champions League, big time in the Champions League. Goals in the European Championship, 14. International goals, 123. And international appearances, 200. He is one of the few players to have made over 1,100 professional career appearances. That is a big deal. He's got over 800 official senior career goals for club and country. He is the highest goal scorer of all time.
And he backed himself as well. When he was 14, he believed that he had the ability, because I think his dad was a kit man for one of the clubs, and he used to
A kit man.
A kit man. Oh, not a hit man, a kit man. No. Looked after the uniforms.
Because that's one way to take out the competition.
No, looking after the uniforms. Yep. He was the kit man. Mm. And he used to hang out with his dad, and he practiced, and he backed himself. And at 14, he thought, you know, I reckon I can do this. I can play professionally. And he got permission from his mum to drop out of school and focus on football. And age 16 was promoted to sporting the team.
That's great.
Sporting the team.
So can play soccer, but is as dumb as a bag of hammers.
I don't know. He might have been really good at school at 14. Maybe he's like a Doogie Howser. Maybe he's super smart.
Right. And just thought, nah, this isn't for me. I know everything there is to know. Yes. I'm going to just completely devote my attention to football now. Mm.
Yes. So age 16, he was signed up. Then in 2002, made his debut. And then I think after that, that was when Fergo found him.
That was
him
in
and
the
Premiera
Liga in Portugal against Braga.
Well, he's playing for
Scored two goals in that one as well. Oh, no, that was in October. Yeah. Anyway, in October he scored two goals against Morirens.
Can we go to Fergo for pronunciation, please?
I get tired of my golden shoes and I'm into Morirens, and they won 3-0 for that one. I'm giving up on pronunciation for the rest of it. But there you go. Ronaldo made his debut, and the football world changed forever. Or the landscape or something. And I'm never going to look at golden shoes the same way. Let's counter all of this athleticism. If Ronaldo had have stayed in school, he might have got into IT.
He might have.
And if he had have, he could have saved the world on the 11th of August against Blaster. The Blaster Worm.
Yes, also known as Love Sam. MS Blast.
It sounds like the
nickname. Or DCOM, or the DCOM Worm.
It sounds like a nickname for a body part, Blaster Worm.
Or the DCOM Worm. Computer Worm that spread on computers running Windows XP and Windows 2000. It was also known as MS Blast.
MS Blast.
Yes.
We caught up with Dan from IT earlier today, and we're like, yeah, we're going to record the podcast. And he's like, oh, good, that sounds like a really exciting night out. I'm actually going to enjoy my life. And I was like, oh, cool, Dan from IT.
He's doing karaoke.
Dan from IT has a better social life than
you
and
I. I know, he's doing karaoke. I'm a bit jealous.
He's in IT. Anyway.
I know. And then I was saying, yeah, we're talking about the blackout. And I was like, oh, and also there was some worm. There was some worm that had, oh, that'd be the Blaster Worm.
Straight away.
Yeah.
whip smart, whip quick, whoosh, Blaster Worm. He knew it straight away.
Maybe he's implicated. Maybe he developed it or something.
But like you said, MS Blast, didn't it? What, W32 Blaster as well, it was called.
Oh.
Lots of names.
Infected millions of computers worldwide.
Yes.
It was self-replicating malicious software that spread through the internet and local area networks or LANs.
Hundreds of thousands of systems all over the world have been infected by this worm. It's relatively tame by industry standards. The problem is it hits businesses who should probably know better, and homeowners who probably don't know what they've just let loose. The Blaster Worm is the newest cyber threat. It causes your computer to constantly reboot, or it forces a message telling you your computer is going to shut down.
Sometimes the machine won't stay on for longer than a few minutes. Sometimes you don't have an internet connection. But various different ways, it makes the machine run incorrectly.
FPNL, the South Florida Water Management District, and the Florida Department of Agriculture all have been bitten by the Blaster Worm. FPNL had its pay stations temporarily shut down, but now most should be back up and running. The fear, though, comes this Saturday when the worm will force infected computers to dial into the Microsoft website, creating internet gridlock.
I feel like that reporter, that was a very high-level report.
Yes,
on what the worm was all about.
By the worm.
It was a little bit more than shutting down computers and turning them back on again and stuff like that.
I think there was a vulnerability in the Microsoft program.
That's
and it
right.
got in there, and then it would try to download a file onto the computer.
Yes.
And then launched denial of service attacks on That's the right. servers. So, and so then it would spread from computer to computer.
And it would do that because it was trying to get – so they had a remote procedure call. You know how you'd like get tech support to remote in? So they go through the Microsoft network to do the remote procedure call, and that basically – it was like, yeah, like a big DDoS attack. That's a DDoS. That's a nerd talk for – I don't know, denial of service.
Distributed denial of service is a DDoS.
I never knew what the first D was. I just thought it was denial of service.
You thought the denial had a stutter.
Yes, indeed.
Created a buffer overload on infected PCs. But he was right. It would display an error message and then your computer would crash and reboot. And I think tens of thousands of Windows PCs worldwide were affected. The interesting thing, though, is that it may have also contributed to the blackout.
What?
In the US and Canada. So remember we were saying that, you know, the branch crashed down and there was some kind of drama with the software where it didn't launch the emergency procedures and it didn't follow the correct protocol. I don't know if it's ever been proven, but there was talk perhaps that they were running Windows XP or Windows 2000 in Ohio and the computer shutting down and rebooting may have had something to do with the emergency procedures not being launched correctly and then the power grid shutting down.
I was going to say, is that a fact? But it might lovely? Not be. But
we're not 100% sure, but there was talk about human error and a software issue being involved. So putting two and two together. Oh, I love it when our stories combine.
Well, That's exciting. Think, speaking of errors, I think Microsoft were able to actually mitigate this at the 11th hour. And there was an error in the design of the Blaster Worm, and then Microsoft were able to change the registration of WindowsUpdate.com, which is where it was going to be attacked.
Yeah, so Windows was going to launch an update or a patch to help the infected computers, and I think the worm was programmed to then take down WindowsUpdate.com or wherever they were going to put the patch. The Blaster Worm was going to take that down as well so that you couldn't get the patch. But I think they had the wrong URL.
Yes.
And then Windows put it out through some other URL. So what? It wasn't as bad as it could have been.
But they did have a message in the,
yes,
in the code.
Yes, they did. I love how nerds do this stuff.
Yes.
It's great.
So it was like, just want to say, love you, son, Billy Gates. Why do you make this possible? Stop making money and fix your software.
Ooh.
Wow. That's imagine if you were intelligent.
He got
enough.
Yeeted.
Did he?
Is that right? No.
What, they threw him somewhere.
I don't know. No.
No. No, he didn't. He didn't.
But yeah, they were paying out the fact that there was too many vulnerabilities in the software, and Gatesy was too busy making money to fix the vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, prioritizing profit over addressing security flaws. The Sun was actually with reference to the guy that made the worm. His name was Jeffrey Lee Parson. So the Sun was taken from Parson. I think it was part of his nerd coding name.
Right.
I think he was also known as T-Kid or T33 Kid online because the threes are E's when you're doing that hacker speak.
Well,
stuff.
He was also became wanted by the authorities after that.
Yes, not surprised.
And they eventually identified him as Jeffrey Lee Parson. They didn't know who he was at the time. And in 2005, he pleaded guilty to creating and releasing the womb. The womb? It's a miracle. The worm, right?
Yes.
And he was sentenced to 18 months in jail.
And it was, I mean, we spoke about there was another worm last year, wasn't there, or earlier this year? Mm-hmm. So it's starting to happen a little bit, and this is where we start thinking about cybersecurity and the importance of updating your software.
Yeah.
Particularly when something goes wrong and your software provider puts out a patch or an update to fix a vulnerability.
Yeah.
Really important to do that. And that's where we started to take this stuff a little bit seriously because, your computer shutting down and rebooting is a pain in the butt. I think we may have got it either at my work at the time or at home. I do remember having an issue where my computer kept rebooting and it was really annoying.
I do know some old guys with a bit of a technical background that are more analog than digital.
Yeah.
And I remember this from back in the radio days and stuff as well, where they were like, don't ever update anything. Don't even connect it to the internet.
Actually, Reginald, you know, is what? Still the best.
Best way to keep it in the best condition as possible is not even to turn the fucking thing on. Just leave it. Just leave it over there. Don't even look at it, and it'll work perfect. Music time now.
Mm.
What's happening in the world of music?
Well, we've still got R. Kelly here in Australia.
Oh, God. We're so behind the times, aren't we?
Few more weeks.
Like, he's been and gone from the charts for so long over in Billboard land, which is this magical country completely inhabited by pop stars that don't wear much clothes.
UK number one is Still Breathe, Blue Cantrell, a.k.a. Tiffany Cobb, daughter of the inventor of the Cobb loaf.
Yes, you know, with some of the best advice that I think any human could have ever had.
I Googled Cobb loaf the other day because I was thinking about it a lot, because I was like, I'm sure it's more than just sour cream and Philly cheese and French onion soup. And I forgot to mention the spinach.
Yeah, it's got spinach. In it. Yeah.
But I have found
that's the only healthy part of it.
I have found a cheese and bacon version of the Cobb loaf online.
Really?
I think we need to try it.
It brings you even closer to death.
I think Tiffany released that version.
Far closer to death than the original Cobb loaf.
I've got an update on your recipe.
Just when
you thought, a software update on the Cobb loaf. I'm going to chuck in some bacon and some cheese. Yeah,
just in case it wasn't healthy and unhealthy enough for you, you're going to throw some bacon and cheese in there.
Yes.
Put people in an early grave.
That's what I've taken away from number one in the UK this week, 20 years ago. Let's have a listen to the top five in the US.
I don't know what you heard about me. But a bitch can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no perms you can't see. Then I'm a motherfucking B.I.M.B. I like the way you do that right there, right there. Switch your hips when you walk and let down your hair, down your hair. I like the way you do that right there, right there. Make your lips when you talk and that makes me stir. I'm in hope for your favorite right now. You kiss, I'm in hope for your savior right now. Looking so crazy, your love's coming, looking, coming, looking so crazy, your love.
The numbers guy's really tightened his game up since that criticism a couple of weeks ago, hasn't he?
It wasn't criticism. It was constructive feedback. Same. And it worked. It worked well because he's upped his game.
Potato, potato. Really.
I do love the sound of his voice.
It's gorgeous.
Needed to
gorgeous.
Pay a bit more attention.
It's a very R&B dominated, hip-hop R&B dominated top five this week, and Beyonce still the queen of the charts.
Yes, Crazy in Love number one, Right There, Chingy number two, Never Leave You, Lumity number four, P.I.M.P. by 50 Cent, and number five, Rock With You, Ashanti. So we do have a new entry in at number four, our life coach, our North Star, 50 Cent.
I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no perms you can't see. Then I'm a mother huffkin' P.I.M.P.
A mother huffkin' P.A.M.P.
Also featuring Snoop Dogg. We need to give Snoop Dogg credit. Credit where credit's due. It was the fourth single from his Get Rich or Die Trying. He's releasing the singles off that album pretty quickly, isn't he? Up to number four already.
Yeah, but I mean,
because that only came out start of 2003.
Well, he's striking while the iron is hot. He's wildly successful at this stage in his career. I mean, this is a debut album.
This is huge.
Is just barnstorming
the
charts.
The man.
Each and he can't set a foot wrong. Even if he does ask somebody 21 questions, which is just don't ask chicks questions, mate. Don't. You get one, maybe two.
P.I.M.P. was mixed by Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
And it features production from Mr. Porter of D12, which Mr. Porter is a big fan of the steel pan.
Oh, the steel drums.
The first time I heard P.I.M.P., this is what I thought of. Do you remember this?
Yep.
Do you remember where you heard it?
Yeah, Sesame Street.
Same. same. I know.
Sesame Street.
So every time I heard PLAMP back in the early 2000s, all I could think of was that Sesame Street steel pan drum thing.
It really bothers me.
Yes.
As to how far off the beat he is in the second part of that.
He is, yeah, he's a bit loose, isn't he?
Incredibly frustrating. But yes, that was the first time I'd ever heard a steel drum. And now every time I hear a steel drum, all I can think of is Sesame Street.
Yes. Well, this isn't Sesame Street. He's a little bit removed from Sesame Street.
Yeah, no kidding. You get carjacked by Ernie and Bert.
The song achieved commercial success, reaching pretty high on all the charts. Mm. It peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100, reaches number 2 here in Australia on the ARIA charts, number 1 on our urban charts, also number 2 in New Zealand and Romania, and number 3 on the Hungary dance charts.
In Hungary, number 3 on the dance charts.
But not on their normal charts, on their dance charts. Mm. That's not a dance song.
Well, I guess maybe it is. I don't know.
What do you think PIMP stands for in this song?
Somebody who manages prostitutes and slaps them to keep them in line.
I'm not asking for a job description. The letters, PIMP, what do you think it stands for?
Low morals. That's what they stand for, low morals. You know, it's a bit of an alternative lifestyle. It's not very mainstream and it's against the law.
Power.
Mm.
Influence.
Right.
Money.
Right.
And I don't think I can say the next word.
I'll bleep it out. Right.
And it portrays the rapper's extravagant lifestyle with lyrics centered around themes of wealth, power, and women. Also discusses the lifestyle of a pimp.
He says that he's a Mother Hufkin, one of those, like a Mother Hufkin PIMP.
Yes, he's extravagant.
Right? So he's saying that he is power, influence, money, and a I'm not 50.
That's what he has. Oh, that's what he possesses.
Song,
he possesses power. He possesses influence.
It doesn't make any sense, Fitty. I'm a Mother Hufkin PIMP. You know.
Don't question our life coach.
You're right. Actually, sorry, I am out of line.
Yeah, you are out of line. Just like
what happens when any of your hoes get out of line, you need to slap me.
The song sparked a bit of controversy, as you could imagine, raised concerns about the portrayal of women and the glorification of the pimp lifestyle.
Does it get cancelled in this day and age, do you think?
I think it would, yes.
Well, pimp was a big thing back in.
I'm wondering. Well, see, I've been struggling with the term pimp actually this year because I have this jacket that I really like. It's a furry jacket.
Yeah.
And it's quite, you know, it looks quite, I don't know.
Do you wear it while you're carrying a cane with a bedazzled cup?
And a big chain. No, but I have in the past because it's quite extravagant looking. It's furry and it just looks blingy.
Mm.
I have referred to it as my pimp coat.
Your pimp coat.
But I do feel that maybe that's not appropriate in this day and age to refer to things as pimp. But I don't know. What do you think? Well, do you think I can still call it a pimp coat?
I think the word has kind of changed a little bit and it means pimp means kind of flashy.
Yeah, like pimp my ride.
Yeah, like that's pimped out.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure I think it would be cancelled if it came out this year.
You're so choogy.
But I do still like the song because there's no business like ho business.
We've got another album release this week, which is very interesting in that it's I don't think it charted, but as far as album releases go, I'm fascinated.
Mm.
This album was called Dungeons and Dragons. It was a studio album by the American musical group Midnight Syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
This album was designed as the soundtrack. This is before the movies or any of that sort of stuff.
Mm.
It was designed as a soundtrack to the Dungeons and Dragons role-playing game. And it was produced by Midnight Syndicate at the request of Wizards of the Coast, which is the company that owns the rights to the franchise, Dungeons and Dragons.
So when you say soundtrack, is it like music inspired by? Or
no,
if Dungeons and Dragons was a movie, this is the music
the
that it inspires?
Well, yeah, no, it's not music inspired by. They've basically written a score for the game. So, you know, Stranger Things. When they're all down in the dungeon, in the basement.
It depends on your perspective,
and
I guess.
And the dungeon master, like one of them is the dungeon master. I think it was Dustin or whatever. And he's like, he's control. Like they're all different characters in the role playing game, and they're rolling the dice and playing the game. So this is designed to be the orchestral score to your Dungeons and Dragons experience.
So you play this album while you're playing
the game. Wow. So the guys Midnight Syndicate are approached by the game designers at a gaming convention. We're not talking like video game designers. We're like board game designers at a gaming convention where they had set up a stall and they're like, hey,
figurines and stuff.
Come over to the Dungeons and Dragons stall. I don't know you paint figurines for Dungeons and Dragons.
What's that? Oh, that's Warcraft, isn't it?
Warhammer.
Oh,
Warcraft is one of them. I don't know.
Remember there was a shop at Woden Plaza where people were painting those things?
Yes. Yeah, there's the Games Workshop stores. And then you walk in there.
They're just painting.
And they smell like thinners and BO. Yeah. Anyway. It's
very strange.
It's cool. Like the intricate detail that they go to. I mean, and, you know, given how much masturbating a lot of those young men do, I'm surprised that they're not blind. I don't know how they can actually paint those little figures. Anyway, so Midnight Syndicate are like, yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. And which is a big change in style because it's like all this fantasy stuff and most of their other stuff was horror stuff.
Yeah,
they're like, I don't think that's that much of a stretch really. Huge change in style. So like the Dungeons & Dragons source books included in all the artwork, it looked like a Dungeons & Dragons product, right? And the enthusiasts, they loved it. All the Dungeons & Dragons people loved it. Here's a review from a guy called Tom. I am a dungeon master and I love playing D&D as both a player and a DM.
Dungeon Master.
That's the acronym for Dungeon Master.
Oh, right. Didn't slide into them. Right.
I know how important it is. It's not a direct message. I have them turned off because I don't want to get cyberbullied. I know how important it is to set the mood of the game. I have done this with many kinds of music, lighting, and incense.
For Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, if you want to set the mood.
Is it like the dragons blowing the smoke from the incense?
That's what Tom does. And it's Tom with a TH, so it could be Thom. That might be his fantasy name. I am one of the many knights of Thom.
What scent of incense do you think he'd be using? Lavender?
Dungeon. Moss. The first time I heard this CD was while I was a player in the great D&D Dungeon Crawl campaign. I was blown away by the atmosphere it helped create. As a dungeon master, I used it again for a dungeon experience for the players. The flow of the music and the atmosphere helped them feel the world. Feel the world. Make it a better place for me and the other dungeon people. This is actually by far the most complimentary album for playing Dungeons and Dragons. Let me show you how it works.
Okay,
right. This particular track is called Army of the Dead.
Okay. Oh.
Greetings, brave adventurers. You find yourselves in the mystical land of Eldoria, a realm filled with magic, ancient ruins, and untold mysteries. Your quest begins as a powerful artifact. The crystal of arcane light has been stolen from the sacred temple. The High Council has chosen you. Councils? Now there's a problem, isn't it? Has chosen you to pay exorbitant rates for your garbage collection. A group of diverse and skilled heroes to retrieve the crystal and restore the balance to Eldoria. And make sure that you put the bins out on recycling night appropriately. Your journey takes you through enchanted forests, treacherous dungeons, and encounters with mythical creatures. Each step brings you closer to the truth behind the theft and the hidden darkness that threatens the land. Sorry, I got a bit excited. Unite your strengths, harness your magic, and embark on this epic adventure in the world of Dungeons and Dragons. May your wits and courage guide you on your quest. Good luck. That's it. See, that's exciting.
Is that incense I smell?
It's my breast. I had a garlic and onion pizza. I shouldn't take the because I loved this stuff. I'm a big fan of Dungeons & Dragons, but it's kind of funny. To have a soundtrack, like, how good is that? Creeping through the dungeons.
It actually sounds really good, yes.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd like to be in somebody's basement and have them turn that on and dim the lights and start lighting incense. Yes. I'd shit myself. That's what that smell is. Oh, it's not the incense. I have shit myself.
We had another album release. Not as cool, obviously.
That is pretty cool.
This week, 20 years ago, A Mark, A Mission, A Brand, A Scar, third studio album by American rock band Dashboard Confessional, described as alternative rock, emo, pop rock, touching on elements of soft rock, hardcore punk.
Yeah.
Drawing comparisons to Manic Street Preachers, debuting at number 2 on the Billboard 200.
You know these emo guys, fans of this emo music, they get bullied by dungeon masters.
Sold 122,000 copies in the first week, certified gold. The single Hands Down, I think, was probably one of the big ones from this album. My hopes are so high that you kiss like kill me. So won't you kill me? So I die happy. My heart is yours to fill or burst, to break a boundary, or wear as jewelry.
You have found yourself in my dungeon, emo boy.
That was ranked as number 51 on Alternative Press's list of the best 100 singles from the 2000s.
I actually think Dashboard Confessional, as far as emo bands go, I would say quite underrated.
They were big. I liked the album prior to this one, which was, I think, was that the Places You Have Come to Fear the Most, I think it was called, or that was one of the singles, I think. I don't know. And the MTV Unplugged album. So a couple of albums prior to this, I quite liked them.
I think they started to lose their way.
And I think you had a lot of emo that was starting to get a bit more heavy at this stage as well. And so
they were realizing that it's not just being a sook, like part of emo run. Means running the full gamut of emotions.
Yes. Bit of anger.
Bit of anger.
Bit of angst.
Heaven help us if they find out that happiness is an emotion as well. Yeah.
Dashboard Confessional had long been poised as the band that would bring emo into the mainstream.
Really? So maybe not as underrated as what I thought.
Well, they kind of did sort of early 2000s, and it was mainly because of Chris, because of his model good looks. All the women loved him.
Yep.
And then he starts singing about emotions.
Yep.
And everyone just thought that was great.
It's like, you find yourself in a dungeon. My arms are so wrong album. Let us venture forth, brave adventurer, into the adventure that is the box office.
Yes, number one here in Australia is still American Pie, The Wedding, but we had a new one in the US. This is one that you liked, isn't it?
That's right. You find yourself in a movie theater. The floor is sticky. There are crumbs of popcorn everywhere. And something is wet on your seat.
Oh.
That's because you went to an action thriller film called SWAT that had Colin Farrell and Samuel L. Jackson in it.
Mount up. We got the call.
We're awaiting the arrival of an international fugitive.
The family's fortune is estimated in the billions of dollars.
I will give $100 million to whoever gets me out of here.
Are you for real or what, Holmes?
$100 million!
What the hell happened?
Our motorcade has been hit.
Stay alert. They're coming out of the woodwork.
We have an ex-SWAT guy leading this attack.
Martella's escaping.
Okay, guys. This is what we trained for.
You will be ready for anyone and anything.
Yeah. Anyone, anything. And little bit of hip hop at the end. It was a big, dumb action popcorn film that was about the LAPD special weapons and tactics. That's a SWAT for short.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Good.
Team, which was led by Dan Hando Harrelson, played by Samuel L. Jackson. And they had to transport this drug kingpin, who was played by Oliver Martinez, Alex Montel, into custody. But he's like, you heard it in the thing. He's like, I'm going to give you $100 million if you get me out. Like, he says that to the media. And then they're like, they have a bad day because then they've got to transport him. And then all of these criminals are like trying to free him for the $100 million.
Mm. Yeah. So Samuel L. Jackson, Colin Farrell was in it as well, wasn't he? Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes.
LL Cool J was in it too.
Do you know who else was in it? And I didn't realize at the time because he was very young, was Jeremy Renner. Yeah.
Yes, I saw that. And then I thought that that was the guy from Entourage, but that's a different Jeremy.
Yes, that's Jeremy Piven.
I know, but then apparently, because I asked ChatGPT and ChatGPT told me that Jeremy Renner was in one episode of Entourage, so I wasn't completely wrong.
No, but that
but
has
I did get my Jeremy's mixed
absolutely
up.
Nothing to do with SWAT.
No,
which
no,
was directed by
Jeremy.
Clark Johnson with a budget of $80 million and it grossed around $207 million. So I'd call that a great success.
Well, it's pretty average though in terms of scores. Yeah, though 48% like critics, 54% audience. I don't
50 poor works.
I don't remember it. I didn't see it.
I saw it and I thought it was dumb.
but you enjoyed it.
It's not to say I didn't enjoy it. I just sat there and went duh and really zoned out and
had an all right time.
That's it. Took my brain out of my head, put it on the shelf, and sat there and watched SWAT. It was awesome. in Australia, number one film is American Pie: The Wedding.
I already said that.
You already said that. Yes. But I was too busy getting excited by SWAT. Over in TV news, the show, I was a massive fan of this show.
Yes.
The box sets on DVD. Mm. I've still got the original box sets. I wonder if they're worth any money. Or did I sell them? I hope I didn't sell them. I don't think I sold them. I think I kept them. They're probably out in the shed.
Possibly.
With lots of other things, like that Prime Possum episode where you met the Governor General.
No, that's inside somewhere. I just can't find it. It's excellent. On VCD.
Anyway, we're talking about Futurama. Mm. VCD, there's a format that wouldn't go into Futurama. So this started in 1999 in Fox, and it was like Matt Groening, Simpsons style.
Simpsons guy, yeah.
20 years ago, but then it goes over to Comedy Central. Well, and they canned it. They axed it. So I think it was like four, maybe five seasons. And then it was gone, and it had a really large underground following.
We were cancelled? Oh, it's terrible, just terrible. Well, clear out your desks and move along. Chop, chop. Yes? I see. Good news, everyone! Those asinine morons who cancelled us were themselves fired for incompetence!
So what does this mean for us and our many fans?
It means we're back on the air! Yes, flying on the air in our mighty spaceship!
We're back, baby!
Yeah, they were back. For a little while. That was in 2010 when they came back to Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. So they wandered around in the dark for ages, like nearly 7 years. And then in 2010 they came back and they aired for 3 years over on Comedy Central. And believe it or not, Futurama is back again.
Is it?
Yep, it's making a comeback again. I'm not sure of the exact details, but maybe it's all a bit messed up now because of the writer's strike and stuff, but it's back again. Futurama follows the adventures of a delivery boy named Fry, voiced by Billy West, who's accidentally frozen and wakes up in the year 3000. Wouldn't that be a hoot? Where he becomes a delivery boy for the Planet Express Corporation. He befriends a guy called Bender, who's a robot, voiced by John DiMaggio.
I follow John's wife, Kate, on Instagram.
Yeah.
And there was a roadrunner outside their house one day and she filmed it. It was quite an interesting bird.
Excellent. Was it never being chased by a coyote?
No, but I've never seen a real life one. And then I saw, I can see they how the cartoon, how they got the cartoon.
Really? I don't think they look anything like the ones.
No,
the
I
cartoon.
Could see it after looking. Oh, I watched it a few times. Yeah. She's a nice lady.
Well, John DiMaggio is a great voice actor.
He
as
is.
Bender.
That's why I started following her. Well, I was followed him first and then I followed her because she's a voice actor as well.
And I think
well.
Bender is kind of the character that everyone keeps coming back for. With
yes, because he's like a drinking robot.
Yes, he's a little bit alcoholic robot.
A little bit uncouth.
Mm. He's, yes. I guess he's kind of there, Homer Simpson, but he's got a bit more of an edge because he's quite aggro.
Yes.
And then Leela, who was voiced by Katie Sagal,
who is the mum from Married with Children
and
Peggy.
Sons of Anarchy, yes. etc. Yeah. A one-eyed mutant who works as a spaceship captain. She's got one eye. Yeah. It was really good, and it had like some really good parodies of science fiction. It had a bit of social commentary as well, which I thought was great. And it was just, I thought that Futurama was written better than The Simpsons.
Did you like it better than Family Guy?
At the time, yes. And Family Guy's kind of got this weird lowbrow appeal to it. Yeah. Like highbrow, lowbrow. Like Family Guy goes for shock value, whereas Futurama I thought was a bit clever. And they had like lots of very, because it had the sci-fi angle, it was a bit geekier, which I really enjoyed. It had lots of cameos like Al Gore, Lucy Liu was in there. I think she was Bender's girlfriend at one stage. Stephen Hawking was on there once.
Mm-hmm.
When he wasn't doing the numbers for our top five.
We had some time off, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mel gave him a break.
But gave him the week off. That and look
time
what he
suspended
did
him for, you know, not being
leaving
too
gaps.
Tight with his charts. Yes. Yeah.
Too Leonard many Nimoy, gaps, have
Spock,
the week off.
Spock, Leonard Nimoy was on there at one stage yes. as well.
And I think when Al Gore was on there, he was trying to warn everyone about climate change. It was quite topical given tonight's episode.
The Beastie Boys were on there once. Their heads were preserved in jars and they did a performance just as heads in jars.
Great.
And that was the thing that gave it that cult following, that cult appeal. I think as soon as if you piss geeks off, they'll rally against you and they'll nag you long enough that you will have to get it back. And
yeah, that's so you probably shouldn't happened. Have teased the D&Ds earlier.
It's like, and they're it's happened time and time again. Futurama is a great example. You know, release the Snyder Cut's a great example. Like, geeks are really good at nagging to get what they want.
Futurama also had complicated mathematical equations and theories hidden in the background of the episodes as well.
Yeah.
Maths.
Completely went over my head.
Yes, so.
I was too busy playing Dungeons and Dragons at the time.
Too busy painting your statues.
Hatches, matches, dispatches, the home stretch. We have a birthday for the 11th of August from the king of podcasts.
Yes.
I think. And the poster boy for ivermectin. That's not true. That is not true. Happy birthday to Joe Rogan.
Yes. American UFC color commentator, podcaster, comedian, television presenter. He started doing comedy in, 1988 in Boston, then moved to LA. He signed a deal with Disney. He was an actor. I didn't realize he was on News Radio.
Yeah.
Remember that show, News Radio?
Absolutely. And that's where I first. That my first memory of Joe Rogan was from that show.
I didn't realize because I loved that show and he was Joe Gorelli, the electrician and handyman.
Yeah, he was the tech.
Ray Romano was originally going to do the role, but he was let go after one rehearsal and then Rogan was brought in.
Mm-hmm.
He was good friends with Phil Hartman on the show. Remember Phil Hartman?
Yes, who also went on to voice like Troy McClure and other characters on The Simpsons and was tragically murdered by his wife.
And Rogan actually spoke about this, saying that he had actually spoken to Hartman about his situation, because I think Phil had confided in him about his marital problems, and he was saying to him, you should get a divorce.
Yeah.
And he said how much he loved his kids and didn't want to leave. And the whole situation and obviously what happened after that really, really affected Joe.
Yes, it did. It had an impact on his comedy career. He had to take a break from that for a little while. But back in 97, he started commentating the UFC. He was doing interviews and color commentary there. And this is like he was also doing like Fear Factor and stuff
was
at the time.
Did he fight himself? Like, was he into martial arts at that point?
No, he wasn't. But he was very into Taekwondo, and he'd always been, I guess, and he competed in Taekwondo when he was younger. He never did UFC.
Yeah,
he never did UFC, but he was always in pretty good shape. And at the same time, he put out like a comedy special in 2000. Oh no! So he started UFC before Fear Factor. Mm. There you go. Should have read the show notes. Anyway, so Fear Factor, he was 2001 to 2006. And while he didn't fight professionally, I do know that Wesley Snipes challenged him to a cage fight.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why would Wesley challenge him to a cage fight?
I don't know. But he trained. Rogan trained for 5 months.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was in.
and then Snipes actually backed out because he was being investigated for tax evasion for the IRS, which is very convenient. I think that Joe Rogan would have handed his ass to him. He would have won that hands down. Oh, yeah. He's like, he would have helped him pay his tax debt too. Anyway, so then he's focused on stand-up, did more comedy specials, and then in 2009, the Joe Rogan podcast comes out. He becomes the biggest thing in podcasting, where he goes from hero and he rises and he gets really popular, and then COVID happens and he starts talking to people and he becomes a villain.
So he's been going since 2009. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. That podcast would be going that long.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Massive, massive.
And that's before podcasting became really big too.
He was one of the first. He was definitely one of the pioneers, and that's why I think he's become so big. By 2015, the most popular podcast in the world receives millions of plays per episode. Spotify paid $200 million for the Joe Rogan Experience in 2020. And look, I don't care what anyone says. I think it's a great show. And I think that he has been unfairly maligned in recent times because of some of the content he puts out there. And I don't know what sort of responsibility people think he has to his listeners, but he's just having a chat to people.
And I think he's very clear that he's not a medical professional, and he gets people from both sides. And I think that's what I like about him as well. He gets people that he doesn't necessarily agree with because he wants to present a whole range of ideas. Mm. And I think that's the good thing about that, is exposing yourself to different ways of thinking and things. You might not necessarily agree with it, but, you know, it's still interesting to listen to other perspectives. And he's always said, like, I'm not a medical professional. Don't take this as advice to go and implement.
Yes, although he is very firm with his opinions, and I can see how people like can get annoyed by that. And there's definitely a lot of things that I don't agree with the dude, but I don't listen to it to be educated. I listen to it to be entertained. And I think that's the difference. Yeah, if you're listening to that show wholly and solely to be educated, I think maybe you're the one with the problem. I did enjoy his episode with Elon Musk. That was one of the highlights.
Does anybody tell you no? Does anybody go, Elon, maybe for yourself, but selling a flamethrower, the liabilities, all the people you're selling this device to, what kind of unhinged people are going to be buying a flamethrower in the first place? Do we really want to connect ourselves to all these potential arsonists?
Yeah, it's a terrible idea. Terrible. Shouldn't buy one. I said, don't buy this flamethrower. Don't buy it.
I don't know any white male in their mid-40s that would not want to be Joe Rogan.
Oprah for men, isn't he?
He's Oprah for middle-aged white males. That's exactly. All right, time for the clue. The Hatch, Match and Dispatch clue. It is a death. It's a person, a notorious figure from history, who said this.
The duty of the woman is the house woman. He knows how to keep house very well. If he can do that, let me make first examinations, appoint women to be the managers of hotel.
Oh, sorry, that is correct. Yes, women should be. No. I completely. I misfired. And this guy, as funny as like all of that stuff sounds, he was a pretty hideous human being. If you said Ugandan dictator Idi Amin, you would be correct. He died on the 16th of August.
Yes.
He was a bad, bad man. We're not entirely sure of what his age is because nobody's kind of sure about the year that he was born in. Mm. But they reckon he would have been around 75 or 80 years old. He died of kidney failure.
Yes.
He killed somewhere between – and it's hard to understand how many people he killed because it's hard to find any records. But somewhere between 100,000 and half a million people he killed. And I'll paraphrase the obituary from The Guardian's Patrick Keatley, who wrote this in 2003. Idi Amin, who has died at the age of thought to be 78, was one of the most brutal military dictators to wield power in post-independence Africa. While chief of staff of the Ugandan army under Dr. Milton Obote's civilian government, he seized power in 1971. He made himself president with the rank of field marshal, and after 8 years of power left Uganda a legacy of bloodthirsty killings and economic mismanagement. Parliament was dissolved, no elections were held, secret police, most of them in plain clothes, exercised absolute power of life and death, and the courts and the press were subjugated to the whims of the executive. The death toll during Idi Amin's regime will never be accurately known. The best estimate from the International Commission of Jurists in Geneva is that it was not less than 80,000 and more likely around 300,000. However, another estimate compiled by exile organizations with the help of Amnesty International put the number of killed at about 500,000. He's a bad man.
Yeah.
Keatley goes on to say that he was neither well-educated or particularly intelligent, and you can tell that by his speeches, but he had this cunning that outflanked a lot of much smarter opponents, including the civilian president, Milton Obote, who he overthrew in that coup in 1971. Now, according to Amnesty International and a few other sources, he created four rival and overlapping agencies to carry out his mass killings. They were the military police, the presidential guard, the public safety unit, and the Bureau of State Research. His bodyguards, he drew from his own Kakwa tribe, and they had their own language and accent that were well placed to detect any attempt by an outsider to infiltrate their ranks. Like, they could tell if you were or you weren't Kakwa. And so, like, he was just—he was lucky in a lot of ways that seven attempts on his life for assassination, he dodged all of that, and then dies of kidney failure. Patrick Keatley goes on to conclude, Amin brought bloody tragedy and economic ruin to his country during a selfish life that had no redeeming qualities. So there you go. There's a nice, bright, happy Hatch, Match and Dispatch. It's a Idi Amin. May he rot in pieces. Yeah. Horrible, horrible man, but he died at this time 20 years ago. And if the film The Last King of Scotland is an interesting watch about his life with who's the guy? Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker plays Idi Amin in that film. Pretty interesting movie. But that's the end. That's the end of the show on a bit of a sour note.
Oh, we want to know what's happening next week?
I'd love to know what's happening next week.
Let me find out what's happening next week.
Sure.
Oh, Pauline Hanson. A bit of a chat about Pauline Hanson. She got into a bit of strife.
Cool.
This time 20 years ago. And there's a guy in the court, and he's got an interesting trinket in his office, which causes a little bit of drama.
What kind of trinket?
Oh, you'll have to wait and see.
Really?
Yes. Nelly is back in the charts after a bit of a hiatus.
Is he?
He's back in the top five. And Jessica Simpson. We're going to chat about Jessica Simpson. She had an album release and a big TV debut.
Excellent. All the girls come out for a public affair next week on T-Minus 20. Thank you very much for listening to us, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.
Thanks for taking the time to rewind. Join us next time for another week that was 20 years ago. In the meantime, come and reminisce on the socials. Search for T-Minus 20 Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.